Hi, welcome to another episode of Leader Feeder. I'm Suzanne Jakes, the Marketing Coordinator at Unique Training and Development, and today I'm here with Kirk Langford, our General Manager. Hi, Kirk. How are you?
I'm good, Suzanne. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good.
Today's topic is the future of virtual leadership training, specifically geared towards manufacturing, because that's what we do here on Leader Feeder. So my first question for you is, why is it important to adapt to new training methods?
Ooh, good question. I think it's important because the methods and the models change, right? Mm-hmm. As we become, like in anything, whether it's medicine, whatever it is, we get better at it. We learn, we used to do it this way. That's not as effective as, you know, this new method or this new approach. And so we adapt our method to make sure that it's more effective and that it works even better. And the same thing happens in training. So we have a model or a method that we use for a long time. And then either we learn through a number of ways that, that's not as effective as we thought it was, or it doesn't give us the behavior change that we're looking for. And as a result, we change. And so I think that's why it's important, because if we're just using that sort of, this is what was done when I was trained. If there's been new, again, methods or approaches to training or working with adult learners that have been developed since then we're going to keep using wrong information or maybe outdated information. And I think that's why it's important to stay kind of abreast of what's going on and to adapt our training methods appropriately.
That makes sense. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
Can you talk about some of the traditional training challenges? Like maybe not using a virtual program, but, you know, just in person, some of those challenges.
So if we're talking about manufacturing in a manufacturing environment specifically, I think some of the biggest challenges are just getting all of the people that need to be in the training room, as it were, in the training room, right? You've got people that are on different production lines. You've got sometimes, we work with a lot of clients, as you know, that are on the facilities running 24/7, often, 3 8-hour shifts. So how do you bring in all the right people, or rather the people that need to be there at one time to be trained? So that's certainly something that can be a challenge for some organizations that we work with. I think another big thing that we see is just getting the right people on board. So what I mean by that is, we might have training, and we often provide training for frontline leaders, right? And a lot of times after our training, we have people come up to us and go, "This was so great. My boss should be in this training as well." And so the frustration for those people is that I've learned all these great new skills, I'm gonna have these new behaviors, be a better leader, but I don't necessarily know that I'm gonna feel supported by my leader. Now, arguably, that's not necessarily a unique challenge to being in person versus virtual, but it is certainly a challenge that we deal with, where we go, how do we get that alignment throughout the organization to get everybody on board with the changes and with those frontline leaders becoming better leaders? So certainly, if we talk about in person, I think scheduling is one of our biggest obstacles. Sometimes you could argue as well, finding the right venue. Sometimes if you have the training on site, what can happen is people need to leave to go put out fires or whatever they need to do. And so they're not quite as engaged or focused as they would be if you were off site. So sometimes figuring out the right venue could be a challenge. But I'd say probably one of the biggest ones is definitely scheduling.
Great. And what kinds of impacts then would come from using the technology? So we talked about just the challenges that can come from in-person training, but now what are some, impacts that companies can gain by using technology or virtual training?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the big things, I suppose, is then scheduling. I mean, scheduling is still something you need to think about, but it's certainly easier if someone just has to kind of pull out a laptop and show up to the training that way, instead of potentially coming in on their day off, into the factory or into the facility. So certainly that's an easier piece, right? Being able to just say, as long as you have a phone or a tablet or a laptop, you can attend training effectively, right? I think another thing is that we work with some pretty big organizations, and some of those organizations have plants or facilities across Canada, across the US, sometimes worldwide. And having virtual training makes it so much easier to bring people together, and so much more inexpensive to bring people together. So for example, we worked with a big organization that had facilities all over South America. So in one training session, we had people attending from Colombia, from Panama, from Costa Rica, where the head office was. And so, as you can imagine, that's pretty hard if you were going to fly everybody or somehow get everybody in one training room in one space. And yet, thanks to virtual training, a lot of these, all of these people were able to attend together. The other neat thing that came out of it, so the other kind of piece of positive impact or value, was that a lot of these people had never been in the same room together. They'd only ever kind of emailed each other or been included on emails, for example. So for them to actually get to have some FaceTime, of course it was virtual, but still have some FaceTime to talk about the challenges they were facing, some of the obstacles, pick each other's brains, it was a really positive experience. So one of the huge benefits is that you get everybody in a room together, as it were, when that can be really hard to do in person.
That's interesting. So what I hear from what you just said was it was beneficial for those teams to get together virtually, easier too as well. Are there other reasons why perhaps virtual training is becoming more popular?
Yeah, I think one of the things is that it can be more cost effective. Again, if you're a large organization, or even if you're a smaller organization, but you just have several sites, getting everybody together can be costly for the organization. And given the current kind of economic climate, that can be challenging for some companies to be able to afford that. And so I think virtual training provides a very cost-effective option that still gets them to have some face time. It still gets them into a virtual training room, as it were, together, being able to share ideas and meet their peers, for example. So I would say that that's definitely a benefit, and probably one of the reasons why some organizations are moving to that. Interestingly, since we've come out of the pandemic, more organizations that we've worked with specifically, so I'm not certainly speaking to the entire industry, but some that we've worked with have preferred to move back to more of an in-person setting. And yet we do still have some that really enjoy the virtual setting. I think they appreciate what you can do. Another small thing about virtual, maybe not a small thing, but another thing about virtual that I think is particularly helpful is timing. And what I mean by that is if you're going to bring everybody together, especially if you're bringing people in from out of town, right, from a different facility or a different site, you're almost never going to do that for just a couple of hours. If you're bringing 30 frontline leaders, from across the state or the province or the country all together, it's going to be at least a half day, if not a full day, or maybe even a 2 or 3 day session. And when we talk about, or when we think about adult learning, or really any learning, we know that that's sort of like drinking from the fire hose, because we want to make sure that every moment they're there is packed full of helpful, important information or something useful. And what can happen is after those 2 or 3 days, we send them back on their way and they sort of have this, where the heck do I start? There was so much information. It was so much to take in, right? One of the benefits of virtual training is that you can have often shorter sessions. So you might only have a 2-hour session at a time. And so in the example of our frontline leadership program, our level one of our program, instead of 3 full day sessions back to back, we might do 6 half day sessions where each half day session of about 4 hours is spread out. So they're only about 3 weeks apart. So that gives them time to learn about 4 hours of content, apply it on the job for a few weeks, and then learn the next piece of content. And with virtual as well, another option we can do is, for example, 2-hour or 2.5-hour sessions. So then really we're stretching it out, which is good because it gives them less to have to digest after each session, but more, and then more time to apply it in between to then see that behavior change. So you could almost argue that it's kind of more bang for your buck, right? It's kind of like if you went to the gym today and you worked out for 7 hours straight, you wouldn't then go, good, I'm good for the month. It's over. I don't have to think about it again. Of course not, right? In a perfect world, you'd work out, maybe every 2 days, a rest day in between, something like that. So it's that same mentality. If we don't go so hardcore, but we stretch it out a little bit, you could argue that we're sort of getting a better deal, as it were. It's more valuable.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, you bring up some great benefits for going virtual with your manufacturing leadership training. Can you think of some challenges now that might arise from it? Because I imagine there's always going to be challenges with any way that a company chooses to go when they're delivering their training.
Mm-hmm. I think the biggest one is technology, right? And what I mean by that is twofold. One is the tech savviness of the participants, right? Do they know how to comfortably and confidently get onto an MS Teams call or a Zoom call or a Google Meet call or whatever platform you're using? Can they get onto the platform? Can they figure out their microphone and their headphones and their camera? And can they get all that working the way they need to? Can they access any files that need to be shared? Or can they do the polling, the online polling, those sorts of things? So that's one piece. Then the other part, though, is just whether they have access to the technology. So are the employees provided with a laptop or a tablet or something that they can use to actually attend the training? Are they given a headset or are they expected to have one on their own? So those are the two big questions, is access to technology and then also the use of the technology. That would be, I think, what we've encountered have been the biggest obstacles. Now, we overcome them. We provide our participants with an overview video that lays out the platform and how it works and how to, you know, mute yourself and unmute yourself and things like that, how to use the chat. And I think most people get pretty proficient, right, at using that technology. But I think it is still something that people do have to, or organizations rather, do have to think about, you know, how tech savvy are the potential learners that are going to be in the program, and what technology do they need in order to be able to participate in the program.
Yeah, that's right. Speaking about organizations and what they can kind of do to think about, you know, how to move this program forward virtually, is there a company that maybe we've learned from or that we could set up best practices? Like, is there a company that comes to mind where maybe something didn't go quite as well, where now you think in your head, oh, we should give the company, or they should start doing this as like a best practice list? Like, should we be doing test runs or should, well, not us, but should the company be doing test runs and, you know, all these other lists you mentioned, you know, the things that they can think about, whereas like, do the participants have what they need and is there a good connection?
Yeah, good question.
Are there other things to add to that list for best practice?
There's certainly things we can do there. You know, one of our clients that we work with, they make small kind of construction equipment, and they were having some troubles where, you know, we'd send, you know, the MS Teams code or whatever it might be. And then next thing you know, there would be connection issues when we thought we'd already tested it and it was good, or rather we hadn't tested it thoroughly enough. So one of the things I think is just doing a test run, you know, doing a test run on the same either Zoom link or the same MS Teams link or whatever it is you're using, with the same link in the same setting, so on the same computer that's going to be used on the day of, whether it's a boardroom computer or whether the participants will have individual computers. I think running those tests are really important because they help the crew that are helping, right? Whether it's the training and development team, whether it's the HR team, helps them feel confident because they themselves might not be super tech savvy. And so if they're the ones that are expected to troubleshoot on the day of the session, and they're also not confident themselves, that can be scary for them. So if we've done a test run where they've come up against some of the potential pitfalls, right? Oh, can we get breakout rooms working? How do we do the polling? Or how do we get people to use the chat? If they've had to walk through it themselves, just like a participant would have to, then when it comes to the actual day of, if anyone's having a problem, they're much more likely to be able to say, oh, I know how to get through this problem. You got to click on this button, or you've got to open this thing, or you got to update this volume or change this volume. So I think the biggest thing is just doing a test run with as many of the variables being the same as they actually will be for the day of the test. Now, sometimes that's challenging, but that's what I would say. Make sure everything's as much the same as the day of the session that it can be, so that any eventualities that are going to occur, you already kind of know, oh, right, that's what I would do in this case or that situation.
Good point. Yeah. I'm smiling here because it makes me think of our own team. Mm. We strictly used Zoom for a long time, and then we started bringing in MS Teams.
And
they're not the same,
no.
Right? So we did have to switch and adapt and learn different buttons and ways to use MS Teams instead of Zoom.
Yeah, that's right.
So yes, that's why I was kind of smiling, because I thought, oh yes, you would want to do a test run and make sure that all these things.
Yeah.
My next question for you is, in a post-pandemic world, right, COVID-19 kind of shook leadership training as we did start going virtual.
It did.
Have you noticed any trends when it comes to virtual training since then?
That's a good question. I mean, when I think about it, you know, I mentioned earlier, specifically within our company, right, we've noticed that we had a lot of clients go fully virtual, of course, during the pandemic. They didn't have much of a choice. And as we've come out of that, we have noticed a pretty big swing back to in-person. Now, that being said, the other thing we've noticed a bit of a becoming more popular is actually blended learning. So organizations that want to start with, for example, an in-person kickoff, right? So if they say they're doing training over 3 or 4 sessions. If cost is a factor, and sometimes it's other factors as well, like we talked about, getting people all into the same site or venue all at once. So one thing I've noticed becoming more popular is companies considering a in-person kickoff, for example, to get everybody excited, get all the managers and supervisors in the room, and then the future sessions are taken care of via virtual sessions. So that would be one of the trends I've noticed, because I think people felt that there definitely was value in virtual, but sort of that nothing can beat in person. So there were these two almost conflicting mentalities, right? But now I think through Blended, you can get the best of both worlds by saying, we need a program that's cost effective, but still has and delivers a lot of value. And I think a Blended program does that because you get people excited and on board with that those first in-person sessions. And then you can move to a blended approach where maybe it's virtual for the next few and maybe you wrap up in person, or maybe it's in person every third session, you know, something like that, some kind of combination of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. My final question to you today mm-hmm. is if you had a company mm-hmm. That you were encouraging to go more towards a virtual training program or solution, I should say, what would the benefits be to both the organization and the employee?
Of going to a virtual solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, if they, right, because I mean, I guess you wouldn't like always encourage a virtual solution to every company, right? Mm-hmm. It would be situational upon, I'm sure, their cost and other things that are going on within their company.
Yeah.
But if they were going towards, if you were to encourage a company to embrace a virtual training solution, what would you tell them the benefits were, you know, for both the company and employee?
I see. Okay. Well, for the company, you already touched on one, is cost effectiveness. Generally speaking, virtual can be a little bit more cost effective depending on the provider and other factors. So I think one of the biggest things is cost. And then the second one I would say is kind of scheduling and availability, trying to get everybody again into that same room at once can be a big challenge. Doing it virtually makes that a lot easier because you can have people attending from home, you can have people attending on the road, you can have people attending from the facility. So that's easier. I think in terms of the employees, it's a potential chance to see people and talk to people, you know, their coworkers and their peers that they might not otherwise ever get a chance to talk to. We hope that, you know, with in-person training, companies are still going to be willing to invest the money and the time and the energy to get people in person, but that's not always the case. And so with virtual, they might get to see coworkers and peers and discuss issues and come up with solutions that otherwise they may never have had the opportunity to do. So I think that's one of the huge benefits to the employees. Another big benefit to the employee, again, is that if you can spread out the training, so instead of 3 full days of training, right, which would be really hard virtually, but tends to be kind of normal in person because you kind of cram it all in while they're together, you spread it out. So you've got these, you know, 2 or 2.5 or 3 hour sessions. They get so much less to have to absorb at once and so much more time to apply it in between sessions. So the learning, I think, packs a way bigger punch. So that would be probably one of the biggest advantages to the employees.
Great. Thanks so much, Kirk.
You're
Thanks
very
for
welcome.
Chatting today about
always a pleasure.
Manufacturing virtual leadership programs. Mm-hmm. It's always really great to pick your brain on these topics.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for joining us today. And if you are a company that has done some virtual leadership training, feel free to let us know how it went. If you have any different takes on it, let us know. We'd love to know. Thank you.